Well, good morning, everyone. If you're new to Bethel, welcome. My name's Joe. I'm one of the pastors on staff here, and I'm just going to share with you for a few minutes this morning. This morning, we're continuing our Christmas series called Grinched. And the idea is that Christmas is supposed to be the season characterized by hope and characterized by peace and joy and love and all of these different things. But so often in the stress of the season, or maybe just in the stress and the demands of life, these things get taken from us and we get grinched in a sense. And so my hope for you this morning, my hope for you throughout this entire series is that you would not become the Grinch, but rather that you would find hope in Jesus. That maybe like the Grinch you thought he had stolen Christmas, that maybe you'd begin to wonder that perhaps Christmas means a little bit more. Perhaps there is more to Christmas than we would have originally thought. And as we enter into our second week of Advent, our second week of the coming of Jesus and looking forward in expectation to the birth of Christ, I want to take some time to talk about all of the hope and the joy and the stress that the Christmas season brings, right? Christmas brings with it so much stress. It's actually kind of incredible. You'd think that for a holiday with, you know, peace on earth, goodwill to men as its mantra, that there would be an apparent lack of stress. But that is just not the case. I went Christmas shopping yesterday at the mall, and I was reminded that Christmas is a season of stress, right? It's 'tis the season of jam parking lots, credit cards, and Walmart checkout lineups that can only be rivaled by Disneyland Space Mountain, right? It just there's so much going on. And I remember even growing up, as a kid, looking at my parents, I could see the stress that Christmas had on them. And one of the big Christmas stressors in our household was always the Christmas meal. The Christmas meal was a really big deal. My mom and my Nana, who made the meal every year, would always be stressing that we wouldn't have enough food for everyone. Which in hindsight, you know, every Christmas we had probably like 15 to 20 people at our home for Christmas. So not entirely unfounded, you know. But they would stress. And everything would have to be perfect, and they would always have a contingency plan. They would always be ready just in case we didn't have enough food, just in case the 2 15-pound turkeys, the ham, all of the stuffing, the mashed potatoes, something that I will loosely term vegetables, which consists mostly of butter, and, you know, and the 3 different types of pie after dinner, just in case all of that wasn't enough to feed everyone, just so no one would starve, my mom always made a small casserole, just in case. Just in case. Her words. You know, the point is that there's a lot of pressure at Christmas that we don't experience the rest of the year. Here's a list of some of the common stressors that we face during the Christmas season. How about buying gifts for family that you barely know? Right? You've got that one uncle or whatever that you see once a year, and he's just hard to buy for, right? What about money, right? What about buying those gifts that you can't afford for those people that you barely see, right? Crowds, traffic, lineups, just a general lack of personal space. If you're an introvert like me, it can be a little bit overwhelming, right? Family dynamics. Family can be a huge blessing, but can also be an incredible stressor. You know, whether everyone's family is different, but whether you've got the racist uncle or you're just trying to live up to your family's crushing expectations, you know, Christmas with family can sometimes be difficult. And the point is that no matter what your Christmas looks like, it can often hold just as much, if not more, stress and anxiety and fear than it does peace. And Christmas, if you really think about it, Christmas really isn't to blame, though. It's not really Christmas's fault. We lack peace in our everyday lives. We lack peace throughout the year. It's not something that's unique to Christmas. We just notice it more at Christmas, because Christmas is the one time of year where we're supposed to have peace. Christmas is the one time of year where everything is supposed to be okay. And so when we don't have peace at Christmas, we just make ourselves busier, and we buy more gifts, and we do more things. And so we distract ourselves. See, the fact of the matter is that anxiety is an extremely common problem in our world today. Anxiety is on the rise worldwide. In fact, in Canada, 1 in 4 Canadians will have an anxiety disorder at some point in their lives. We live in a time of global instability, of economic crisis, global warming, and world leaders that have the ability to start World War III just by using their smartphone, right? We live in a very stressful time, and you add to all of that just the stress of everyday living, and you could find yourself on a Tuesday morning having an ethical crisis about whether or not you should compost something, right? Because if you compost the wrong thing, the whole system's just going to collapse, and it's over. You know, and so we carry all of this stress with us at work. We're demanded to produce more and more. We become robots or machines that have to burn the candle at both ends of the night. Right? You've got to work hard. You've got to get out there. You've got to produce. And if we stop producing, in many ways, we lose our sense of worth. Whether it's our own self-worth, about how we feel about ourselves, or maybe it's our worth at our job, or whatever it is. When we slow down, we begin to lose our sense of self-worth. And so the question we have to ask ourselves this morning is, where do we find peace? Where can you find peace in this crazy world? You know, so many people are turning to mindfulness or meditation or all kinds of different things. Is the answer cutting out the caffeine, putting healthy rhythms in your life, eating more vegetables that aren't saturated in butter, right? You know, all of these things help. All of these things help. But in themselves, they can never give us true peace. They are helpful, but they're not our hope. I'm going to say that again. They're helpful, but they're not our hope. Our hope is found in Jesus. In Luke's account of Jesus' birth, he records a series of prophecies leading up to the birth of Jesus. A series of God speaking through people, talking about how Jesus, when he was born, is going to change the entire world for the rest of time. And one of those prophecies we read this morning for our Advent reading, it was the prophecy of Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. And he was prophesying how Jesus was coming to bring peace. How Jesus was coming to bring peace. And I just want to focus on the last three lines of that prophecy this morning. He says, to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. To guide our feet into the path of peace. See, the path of peace is not found through mindfulness or meditation or mental health practices. The path of peace is found through Jesus. Now, hear what I'm not saying this morning. Hear what I'm not saying. What I'm not saying is that you shouldn't live a healthy lifestyle, practice mindfulness, go see a counselor, or take your meds. I am not saying those things. Those things are an important piece of the puzzle. Those things are helpful. Those things are good. But what I am saying is that these things alone will never give you perfect peace. See, Jesus promises us peace that is out of this world. In John 14, 27, Jesus is talking to his disciples and he promises us this. He says, I am leaving you with a gift, just in time for Christmas. I am leaving you with a gift, peace of mind and heart. And the peace I give is a gift the world cannot give. So don't be troubled or afraid. I don't know about you, but that sounds like something that I could use in my life. Peace that is out of this world. Peace that I can't find anywhere in this world. Peace that I can't find within myself or in someone else. Peace that comes only from God. And so we have to ask ourselves, what is this peace that the world cannot give look like? Well, the Christian understanding of peace is a little bit broader than just our modern understanding of, say, inner peace, for example. The Christian understanding of peace actually finds its root in the Hebrew word shalom. And it refers to a peace not just of the internal person, but also society as a whole. It's characterized by prosperity, harmony, and well-being. Shalom is conditional upon peace with God because he alone is the peace giver. And so when Zechariah prophesies that Jesus is our guide to peace, His primary concern is that Jesus is bringing us into peace with God. Because that is the foundation of peace. That is the bedrock of peace. Without peace with God, there is no peace, period. See, our greatest need as humans is to be loved and accepted as we are. Right? Not as we should be, but for who we are. That is our greatest need. And so what we do is we pursue peace in all kinds of different ways. See, that the root of our fear and our anxiety, when it's stripped down to its core, is this. It's that the fear is that I am not enough, therefore I am unlovable. Let's say that again. Our greatest fear is that I am not enough, therefore I am unlovable. And so what we try to do is, that's kind of a terrifying thought. And so we keep ourselves busy. We try to make ourselves more lovable. We pursue success or influence. We strive to be greater. And maybe we can hide how we feel in front of others, but we can't fool ourselves. We stress out and we get anxious because we're trying to hold everything together. We're trying to control all of the pieces and build this sense of identity for ourselves. And it all seems so, so fragile. Just one wrong move and it's all going to fall apart. And our only way out, our only solution is peace with God. That is the foundation of peace. And if you take that away, everything else crumbles like castles in the sand. See, in Zechariah's prophecy, he also says this. He says, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins. You see, the peace that Jesus brings is the forgiveness of sins. And what that means is that all of your wrongdoings, all of your failures, all of your shame is gone. See, no one can forgive sins but God alone. And that is what Jesus has done. And it's these same sins that separate us from God, but Jesus came so that we could be forgiven, to wipe the slate completely clean. And what this means is that our greatest fear, that the fear that I am not loved, therefore, I'm sorry, I'm not enough, therefore I'm not loved, that fear is brought into the light and it's exposed. It's exposed for the lie that it is. You see, the gospel, the good news is that Jesus sees you. He sees us in our sins. He sees us in our imperfections. He sees us in our failures, and he loves us anyways. See, the peace that Jesus gives, the love that Jesus gives, is not based on our performance. It's not rooted in what we can produce or how we behave. The love that Jesus gives us is based simply on our being human. In John 3:16, it tells us a powerful story. It says, for God so loved the world. That means you. That means me. That means all of us. For God so loved the world that he gave Jesus so we could have a relationship with him. And so you see, the path to peace is through Jesus. It's only when we finally come to terms with the fact that we are not enough that we can finally open ourselves up to be truly loved, to truly be at peace with God. You see, so much of our attempts at achieving or striving for peace are what the Bible would call chasing the wind. It's futile. You're trying to achieve something that you can't achieve. You're trying to grasp something that you cannot grasp. Instead, the path of peace that Jesus guides us into can't be achieved. It's just, as Jesus said, a gift. And so this morning, I want to take a few moments to walk with you in how you can receive the peace that Jesus gives. Because you can't earn it, you can't achieve it, but you can receive it. And so the first way that we receive God's gift of peace is to simply be. Simply be. You know, there's something about that word be in itself just looks so small and unfinished. It looks like there needs to be something else there to complete it. And I think that's often the way that we feel when we just exist, when we just be. We kind of feel like we're missing something, like we need something. We kind of start to panic a little bit. You know, growing up, my parents instilled in me a really strong work ethic, which is something that I'm really grateful for. It's something that I try to instill in my kids as well. But growing up, the worst thing that you could ever do was sit down on the couch. If you sat down on the couch, within 30 seconds, you would have some kind of chore or job, or you'd be sent out to the shop to help dad do something. Like, you always had to be doing something. Like, even for fun, like, bots don't sit around and talk. We have to do board games or something. Like, even in our socializing, we've got to be productive, right? Like, we've got to make things happen. That's what it means to be a bot. And so I find now that even as an adult, sometimes I'll just be sitting and doing nothing, and I will feel this tremendous amount of guilt for not doing anything, right? Has anyone ever experienced that? Yeah, it's a thing. And so the question for you this morning is, when was the last time that you simply existed? And I don't mean that in a bad way. And the fact that I have to clarify that kind of shows that where we're at. When was the last time you simply existed just as you, that you just would be? See, in our society, identity is primarily something that you have to create for yourself. You have to choose who you want to be. You have to work at it. You have to strive for it. And it feels fragile. It feels like you're just holding it together. But in Christianity, your identity is not something that you create or you build or you have to make. Identity is primarily something that's actually given to you. See, Jesus said that for whoever would believe in him, they have the right to become children of God. See, your identity isn't found in your performance or what you do or how well you behave. Your identity is found in being a child of God. And now we like to say this in church all the time. We like to say, you're a child of God, and just kind of leave it there. But I want to dig a little bit deeper there. You know, what does that mean to be a child of God? What does that mean? You know, I think there's a lot of things that flow into it. But one example, I think, of what it means to be a child of God is my son Caleb goes to the primary school in town, and he loves it there. He has a great time. But one day, he came home from school, and he was really discouraged. An older kid was picking on him or making fun of him or something like that. It had really taken his self-worth down a notch. And he came to me, and he just came right to me, and I gave him a great big hug. To me, that's what it means to be a child of God. So often we look for our worth and our significance and all of these different things and other people's opinions of us. But to be a child of God is just to come to our Heavenly Father and to be accepted, regardless of what we've done, regardless of who we are, but just to be loved. And so, you see, it doesn't matter who you were. You're a child of God. It doesn't matter how you see yourself. You're a child of God. It doesn't matter how others see you. You are a child of God. And we believe this at one level. At one level, we get this, but not at another. See, on one hand, we believe that we've been made at peace with God, and glory to God, I'm going to go to heaven one day. My sins are forgiven. Awesome. But there's another level where we have a hard time grasping that. We have a hard time seeing ourselves as God sees us. You know, while we philosophically and spiritually accept the gospel, we reject its practical application in our lives. And that's namely that we don't have to just strive to attain peace anymore. Timothy Keller, a pastor and author in New York City, he writes this. He says, we habitually and instinctively look to other things beside God and his grace as our justification, hope, significance, and security. We believe the gospel at one level, but at deeper levels, we do not. Human approval, professional success, power and influence, family and clan identity. All of these things serve as our heart's functional trust, rather than what Christ has done. And as a result, we continue to be driven to a great degree by fear, anger, and a lack of self-control. You see, it's not just enough to say, hey, you know what, Jesus saved me, that's great, I don't need the gospel anymore. No, that's not it. The gospel is a way of life. It's a way of living. It's a path to peace where daily we need to soak in it, where we need to bathe ourselves continually in what Jesus has done for us. We need to bathe ourselves continually in the love that God has extended to us and his grace and his peace that he has freely given to us. To understand over and over and over again the truth that God is all we need. And so the first thing that you can do this morning is to stop doing things and just be. The second way that we can receive the peace that Jesus gives is to be silent. Silence is one of the most life-giving, uncomfortable, and terrifying practices that you can do. You know, Blaise Pascal is famous for his quote, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone." You know, we avoid silence like the plague. We run from silence. And we don't run from silence because it's silent. We run from silence because it's loud. There's a song written by a band, 21 Pilots, called Car Radio. And this song is written about this guy who's driving to work, and one day someone broke into his car and stole his car radio, and now he has to drive in silence. And as he's driving in silence, all of his greatest fears and worries and concerns just begin to come up and begin to go wild. He says, "I ponder of something terrifying, because this time there's no sound to hide behind. I find over the course of human existence, one thing consists of consistence, and it's that we're all battling fear. Oh dear, I don't know why we're here. Oh my, too deep. Please stop thinking. I liked it better when my car had sound." It's when we sit in silence that we come face to face with our fears. It's when we sit in silence that we come face to face with our need for God. But most importantly, as a follower of Jesus, when you sit in silence, you open yourself up to hear his still, small voice. The voice that is just so full of love and peace that in just one word he could shoot down your greatest fear. See, when God speaks, his perfect love casts out all of our fears. It's in silence that we realize that we're more than what we do or what we produce. It refocuses our perspective and reminds us of what is most important. And so I want to challenge you this morning. When was the last time you went for a walk alone? When was the last time that you turned off the car radio? When was the last time you went to the ocean and just sat there? So we can receive the peace that Jesus gives by simply being, by resting in who we are, not who we want to be, not who others think that we should be, but in who we are, who God has made us to be. We can receive the peace of God by being silent, by turning off the car radio, going for a walk, being alone with our thoughts and with God. And finally, we can find peace when we're in his presence. We can find peace when we're in his presence. In Isaiah 40, 31, we are given this promise. "But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." You know, when I look back at my life, I know I've lived so long. But when I look back at the moments in my life, the major turning moments in my life, the moments that changed the substance of my faith, the direction of my life, that affected my calling, there were moments in God's presence. There were moments where I put my own dreams and schedules and ideas and plans all aside. I said, "Okay, God, it's just you and me and all my doubts and all my fears, and all my failures, let's just do this thing." Because foundationally, we need to be at peace with God. We need to be at peace at God. You know, I think the only thing that is more terrifying and scary than sitting alone by ourselves is that we fear sitting alone with God. Because deep down, we still don't know if he can be trusted. And the only way to truly know that, the only way to truly know that God can be trusted is to be in his presence, to be loved by him, to come with all of your stuff and be loved anyways. You know, I remember this one time early in my Christian walk, I came to God and I was terrified. I had screwed up royally. And I was just absolutely afraid of what God was going to do to me. I figured he was going to punish me. And I figured that, and you know, I thought that's what I deserved. And so I came before God and I was just pouring out my heart to him. And I didn't get punished by him, much to my surprise. I didn't even receive I told you so, which I was also expecting. Instead, I received what I could only describe as what felt like the greatest hug I've ever experienced. It was like pure love surrounded me and embraced me. See, and it's only when we are in that moment, when we open ourselves up to be in God's presence, to be loved by him, that we recognize what it truly means to be a child of God. That we recognize that God isn't waiting up in the sky to squash us or to punish us. It's where we realize that there is substance to the words that the angels had to the shepherds on the night of Jesus' birth when they said, "Peace on earth, goodwill towards men." Goodwill. That God loves us and cares for us. And so when we can simply be in his presence, he changes us in ways that are unimaginable. The path to peace is through Jesus. I'm going to invite the band to come on up. Is it okay if I get a little vulnerable with you this morning? Is that okay? Is this a fairly safe place to do that? Cool. I'm going to be really honest with you about something. This sermon was really, really hard to write. And the reason that this sermon was so hard to write is that peace is often a daily struggle in my life. You know, earlier I mentioned that one in four Canadians at some point in their life will have some sort of anxiety disorder. And I've got an anxiety disorder. And I've had one for probably as long as I can remember, actually. And the funny thing is I didn't realize it until about three years ago. It was during a really stressful time at work. I was on staff at a really fast and rapidly growing church, and it was growing faster than staffing could handle, and so my job description kept getting bigger and bigger, and I took on more and more responsibilities. And I found that when I was driving in between appointments, I would forget to breathe because I wasn't doing something. I wasn't in control, so I'd be driving, and I'm like, oh, I'm not breathing right now, and then I would have to start breathing again. I would wake up in the morning before the day even began, even if it was a Saturday and I had nothing to do, with just this tightness and this heaviness just right here. And so I went and saw a counselor. I put some good rhythms in my life. I did all of the things that you should do, and they helped. And they do help, and they are great. But the greatest thing that has helped me, the greatest person that has helped me, is Jesus. Understanding that I am at peace with God, that at the end of the day, my opinion of myself and others' opinions of me can wash off, and I can just be loved by my Heavenly Father, it changes everything. And the reason I tell you this morning is so that you know that when I say these things, when I talk about peace, I'm not just some guy who's experienced a couple stressful weekends and I'm giving you, you know, three easy steps to peace. I'm telling you this from someone who lives with anxiety but believes in a God that heals and believes in a God that is my peace and believes in a God who made a way for me and you to have peace with God. And that will change your entire life. And so what I want to do, if you're willing to go there with me this morning, what I want to do is I just want us to sit for a few moments without an agenda, without a plan. I preach short. Don't worry about it. We'll get to the food. But just to sit and maybe bring some of your stuff to Jesus. And just see what he will do.